Welcome to the AP Now podcast, the podcast that covers trends, insights, and emerging issues impacting every accounts payable function. Your host, Mary Schaefer, is the founder of AP Now, a B2B digital information and learning company focused on all issues related to AP. Stay tuned as Mary and her guests discuss the business intelligence you need to ensure a cost-effective, technologically efficient, fraud-resistant, regulatory-compliant accounts payable function. Without further ado, let's dive right in.
Welcome to Episode 5 of the AP Now podcast. I'm Mary Schaefer from AP Now. In this episode, we welcome Deborah Richardson, an expert on Master Vendor File. Today's show is brought to you by Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. I met Deborah when she approached me about being on her podcast, Putting the AP in Happy. She's helped me a tremendous amount answering all my idiot questions about podcasts, some of them more than once. In her company, Deborah R. Richardson focuses on helping companies with an often overlooked concern, master vendor file issues. Deborah, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to found your company and the genesis for your podcast, Putting the AP in Happy?
Sure, and thanks, Mary. I'm very glad to be here today. So I actually started off, of all things, with an English degree. And, you know, I was 19 and I needed to register. I was going to U of M at the time and they wouldn't let me register without declaring a degree. And the law school was right across the street. And so I came out of registration. I looked around. I saw the law school. I asked what degrees they would accept. And they said one of the answers was English. And I thought, I like to read. So I went back across the street and I registered as an English major. And then coming out, when I graduated, I ended up at a small business and I ended up doing or helping with the accounting side. And so I kind of fell in love with the GL accounting, AR, financial reporting, budgeting, variance analysis, that type of thing. And so I went back, got all the business degree or business classes that I didn't take in undergrad. And I got that with an MBA. And then I went on and started my corporate career. But it wasn't until I took a position as a controller with AP oversight that I really got into the AP function. And so my next position, I had a chance to build an AP department, and I did that. And then I was recruited by a Fortune 15 company to come in and run the global vendor maintenance department. We had a team of 18 that processed 2,000 requests per month, and I just absolutely loved it. We had 140,000 domestic and international or foreign vendors across 7 different ERPs, and I just absolutely loved it. I led a team to implement a global vendor portal, and it was really great. But after 20 years in corporate, it was time to move on. And I'm sure many of your listeners have been there.
Oh, yeah.
And so last year, I left and I decided to go on my own and really focus on what I loved about vendor maintenance, and that is the actual process and using that process to prevent what we had been dealing with for the recent couple of years, and that is making sure that we protect that vendor master file from those cyber criminals out there that are trying to either get their information in your vendor file so they can redirect payments or try to get the team to wire them money, as we've seen with the business email compromise scam. To answer your question about putting the AP in Happy. So I had just met my husband actually a few years before I left corporate America. And I was telling him what I did and how much I loved AP. And he kind of looked at me like I was crazy.
Yep.
And yeah, that. And then, so I'm always a happy person. And he always remarked about that. And so I said, Well, I love AP. There's even an AP in happy. And I was trying to use that to convince him that, yeah, AP is cool. And I thought about that. Wow, that's really good. There's an AP in happy. So I put that in my signature at work and everyone just loved it. So when I went out on my own, I wanted to put some action behind it. Mm-hmm. And so I changed there's an AP in happy to putting the AP in happy, and I named that, I put that in my logo, and then I also named my podcast after it. And the point of the podcast was, you know, this is the voice for, you know, the forgotten AP, but we're getting a lot more traction now. And specifically, you know, the vendor maintenance team and giving them a voice and letting them come on and talk about their experiences in AP, their vendor story. So that's really, you know, my background and how I came to putting the AP in happy and getting that podcast out on a weekly basis. And I just love doing it.
Okay. So Deborah, when you talk about Master Vendophile, you use the word globally. Could you explain a little bit what you mean by globally and how that might differ from an organization who has all domestic vendors?
Yeah, and so what I really do is, and this is thus far in my consultancy, I focus on U.S. entities or U.S.-based entities that do business with other U.S. entities or non-U.S. international foreign vendors, whatever you want to call them, those types of entities. I don't have a focus yet on non-U.S. entities doing business with other non-U.S. entities. But one of the things that I can say is that even when you have when I have a client and the client says, we don't have any non-U.S. vendors, we only have domestic vendors, mm-hmm. I always find at least two or three of them there. So the additional work that comes with, you know, having those non-U.S. vendors, right, that brings the WA, where now now you have to learn how to collect the right forms. Now you have to know how to determine if the withholding is required. You've got to now track those WA expiration dates. You got to make sure you're capturing and identifying the right codes that are going to eventually go on to 1042. And then there is the whole world of international banking requirements. So when I really talk about global, I focus my blogs and podcasts on U.S. entities doing business with other U.S. entities, mm-hmm. and then also doing business with non-U.S. international or foreign vendor entities.
Okay. Okay. So for vendor maintenance teams globally, what are the key areas that they need to focus on to protect against the vendor master file from fraud? Because we know there's been a lot of that, unfortunately.
Yeah. There has been a lot of that. And for the past 8 years, I've really focused on accounts payable. And then the last five of those 8 years were strictly vendor maintenance. And I actually inherited, when I was still in corporate, I inherited the task of teaching the accounts payable team how to protect the vendor master file, because it was my information, or I was over the information that was deemed sensitive in accounts payable, right? Because we have the master vendor file, and in there you've got the tax ID, which could be a social security number. You've got the banking information, which they definitely, meaning the cyber criminals, want to get to so they could thwart payments. And then there's also the birth date, if the scenario matches when the IRS requires a foreign individual, if they don't have a tax ID, to capture their birth date. So I was the one that had the sensitive data. So I was kind of voluntold, but I loved it, that I was responsible for making sure that I kept that information safe and that I worked with the information security team to train the accounts payable customer service help desk and then also our vendor maintenance team so that we protected that sensitive data at all times. And so when I went on my own, I rolled everything that I learned into a three-step process that starts with authentication, and that's where you ensure the data that you receive is from a reliable source. So meaning it's from the actual vendor or from an internal employee. And then once you've validated the source of the data, you then take the data that you receive and you confirm that that data is valid. You confirm that the vendor is real prior to adding it to your vendor master file. And then the last step is management, meaning once you have that information in your vendor master file or master vendor file, that you manage your active vendors so that the data remains valid and your vendors continue to be real. And that includes things like, you know, making sure you revalidate your vendors periodically, making sure that you inactivate vendors so you don't have more active vendors than you need to. If they haven't done business with you, inactivate them. And that's less vendors that you have to worry about fraudsters trying to penetrate. So of that three-step process, I love that today we are focusing on authentication because that is the first step where you can eliminate fraudulent requests from even moving to that second step of validation.
Okay, that seems pretty important. We can continue this when we come back. We want to take a brief break with a message from our sponsor. AP professionals know invoices are easy to lose, and it takes time to track down approvers while having to code, log, cross-reference, verify, reconcile, and cut checks, all while staying compliant. Stamply simplifies all of that. When invoices enter the system, Stamply's AI, called Billy the Bot, immediately gets to work by proposing GL codes, approvers, and flagging issues like PO mismatches and potential duplicates. AP simply confirms the information is correct and submits the invoice for approval. Here's the best part. Stamply fixes the disconnected communications between approvers, AP, and the vendors. With Stamply, conversations are centered around each invoice, and anyone can be invited to the conversation, getting to the approval decision up to 5 times faster. Visit stamply.com/AP now. See for yourself how your team can work smarter, not harder. That's stamply.com/AP now. Okay, Deborah, you and I have talked a lot about frauds, especially in the U.S., this please change my bank account fraud, and the need for in authentication. Why is it so important for accounts payable teams when it comes to master vendor file?
Yeah, so it is very important. And, you know, if you ask the question, or I don't know if it's a riddle, but if you ask, you know, why did the cyber criminals cross the road to accounts payable? The answer is because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
Yep. And so they're always trying to either get your data so they can sell that out on the dark web or get your money. And they can do that by sending requests for wires, or they can do that by trying to what you called in your first episode, that vendor impersonation scam. So it's very important that we authenticate these requests. And that vendor impersonation scam, you know, where a fraudster pretends to be a vendor and sends a request to update the banking information. Well, if you had a requirement to provide data that's on the vendor record that only the vendor or someone that works at the vendor's company knows, that vendor record may not have been updated. And a great example of that is old banking. So if the vendor submits a request, or if the accounts payable team receives a request to update vendor banking, if they require the old banking to be submitted along with the new banking, that would definitely prevent a lot of the fraud, because the cyber criminals in their phishing emails would not be able to provide that information. And so the authentication part of that, which is as providing the old banking, confirming or authenticating that you are actually the vendor can prevent those types of fraud from being processed. But in order for that to work, you also have to then train your accounts payable team, your vendor team, to limit the information that is given out if a fraudster or even if the real vendor contacts you. So let's say we've got a vendor that sends an inquiry and wants to know what their banking information is. Well, if you give them that, that could be a fraudster that they could turn around and use that old banking to now give to you to change the vendor's banking because you've just given it to them in another call. So there's that authentication of requiring certain data in order to update or even provide vendors or any external requests that come in to authenticate and then also restrict the data that you're able to give them so that when there is a request to update vendor data on the vendor record, you are not giving them what they need to authenticate for those to be updated. So in order for that to work, you've got to restrict what you give out. And what I recommend, and we did this when I worked at a Fortune 15 company, is that you arm your accounts payable, customer service, or help desk team members, along with your vendor maintenance team, with an authentication matrix. So you would identify certain criteria that needs to be given in order to process a request or in order to answer an inquiry so that you can confirm that that is actually the vendor or someone that works at the vendor company. And I would argue employees as well, because, you know, not every accounts payable person has that relationship with every employee. Mm-hmm. And if they're calling, you know, outside of work, if they're calling within work, you know, you may have the IVR that would authenticate right. them, or you may have some software where their information comes up on the screen.
Right.
But if they're calling from a cell phone, how do you know, that that's the real employee?
Right.
So not only the vendor do you need to authenticate, but also the employee.
So one of the things, Deborah, that we're recommending now is that because this please change my bank account scam can be so devastating and the dollar mm-hmm. amount so huge is that mm-hmm. people actually pick up the phone and call. And you know, I recommend that as a best practice. I know some people complain, oh, that's a lot of work. So do you want to comment on that a little bit?
Yeah, it is absolutely more work. The authentication is absolutely more work. But compare that to the loss that,
right.
that can occur. And, you know, even if you've got so many requests per month and it's taking up more time, that one request that is fraudulent that you prevent makes up for all of the other times yep. that you have reached out and it was valid. And I have to say, you know, there was, I think it came out yesterday, where an Ottawa City treasurer wired, you know, I think it was $128,000.
Yeah.
It was Canadian dollars, but they converted, I think it was $128,000. But she wired it, and had she picked up the phone or had she had an internal control to maybe have a second person review the wire,
right.
maybe they would have seen something that she didn't see. And, you know, this isn't someone that's, you know, that was inexperienced.
Right.
She had been in the job for 14 years, you know, and so you can't rely on employees being 100% of the time able to spot these phishing attempts. You need to put some authentication techniques and internal controls in place so that even if they don't spot it, they are still not processed. And one of the things that I've read out there is that fraudsters have a saying, if email doesn't work, call them on the phone. So they've got a plan in place. We need to have a plan in place.
Yep. Yep. Right, because, you know, it's our job to make sure they're not successful.
Correct. And, you know, one of the things, especially if you're talking to a fraudster on the phone that's trying to call and social engineer information out of you, is that if you start pushing back and if you start asking them questions to authenticate who they are, they will actually just hang up on you.
Yes.
Because they don't know the information.
Yep.
And they'll hang up on you. And on that note, you want to also make sure that you limit the information that's available in your master vendor file. You limit what's available to folks outside of the AP department,
yes.
Those who haven't been trained, because you don't want the fraudster to hang up from AP and then call over to, you know, Susie in another department and then get that information. She'll go right in the accounting system or ERP and give them their information
yep.
that they couldn't get out of AP. So you want to make sure that you mask that sensitive data. Any criteria that you're using for authentication, you want to make sure that you limit that data and just don't show it to anyone outside of AP.
Yep. The other thing is that while most employees are honorable, not every employee is honorable, unfortunately.
That is absolutely true. And I think it's still on Netflix. I checked a couple weeks ago, but there was a documentary called All the Queen's Horses.
I just watched it.
Yes, it's like 70 minutes long, and
yes.
It's all about, I forget if she was a finance director, I forget if it was for a city or a town.
Yeah,
but
it was,
you know,
it was a city, but they also didn't have appropriate segregation of duties. She was doing everything.
Right, and she embezzled
$53 million. Yeah.
And that's not even the highlight, even with that amount. The highlight was that she did it over a period of 20
yeah.
years.
And she was spending the money. She was a horse breeder, so she was
yeah.
living well above her salary, and people just thought it was an inheritance.
Yeah, they thought it was family money. Nobody
yeah.
checked up on it. No one did anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a lesson learned, and it's a very recent lesson learned
yeah.
that hopefully accounts payable teams out there will implement some of those internal controls to mitigate the segregation of duty issues. Because
yeah.
we do know there are small departments out there
yep.
that don't have multiple employees, and that's fine. You just need to put those compensating controls in place.
Okay, Deborah, any concluding thoughts?
Yeah, so I guess the biggest thing is, you know, with your authentication techniques, it doesn't have to be a hard thing. You know, I recommend that you pick two criteria to authenticate the vendors or employees that are calling in, that are emailing, before you start discussing what the issue is. Pick two criteria, and you can pick them from different functions, like, for example, a PO number and an invoice amount, or an invoice number and the last four digits of the tax ID, and create a matrix so that you can give that to your accounts payable team or vendor maintenance team that deals with vendors so that they know what choices they have. Don't pick the same two. So give them some choices between invoicing information, purchasing information, and information from the vendor file. And then they can choose, so everyone's not using the same two criteria every time.
Mm-hmm.
And then also include what information they can provide and then what information they can confirm. And the last thing is just remember that employees, like we talked about, phishing awareness training is great. You absolutely need it. But your employees cannot be on 100% of the time. They can't be 100%.
Right.
100% of the time, there's month in, they're being rushed to do things, you know, they're in when they're sick instead of staying home. So there's never going to be a time where they are always 100%. So combine that phishing training with authentication techniques, with internal controls, so that you can stop those fraudulent requests from being processed. And then remember authentication, validation, and management to protect your vendor master file from fraud.
Okay, that was great, Deborah. Thank you for joining us. Thank you, those who are listening, for listening to the AP Now podcast. And a special thanks to our sponsor, Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation. If you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate this episode, review this episode, subscribe to the series, or even better, share it with your community on LinkedIn or Facebook. Or wherever. To be alerted to new episodes, please visit www.ap-now.com and sign up for our free e-zine. Again, thank you, and we hope to see you again at a future podcast. Mm-hmm.